Grab a cup of tea or a glass of wine and tune in for Inspired Conversations with publisher Linda Joy on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Linda creates sacred space for leading female luminaries, empowering authors, heart-centered female entrepreneurs, coaches, and healers. A soulful venue where guests openly share the fears and obstacles they've overcome, wisdom and lessons learned, and the personal journey that led them to the transformational work they do in the world. Inspired Conversations to empower you on your path to authentic, soulful living.
Welcome to Inspired Conversations. I'm your host, Linda Joy, Inspirista, Mindset Mojo mentor, and publisher of Aspire Magazine, the beloved magazine that has been inspiring women to live their best lives since 2006. Sometimes I have to pinch myself. Now, if you haven't claimed your free subscription, I invite you to go to subscribe2aspire.com today to get started. You know, there's some conversations that you just know are ordained to happen. And when I heard about this new book that was out, I said, I have to know this woman. I got to get her on the show. And it's called Creatrix Rising, Unlocking the Power of Midlife Woman. And ladies, come on. I know that's you because I know my audience. So award-winning author Stephanie Raffalock is a remarkable woman with an empowering mission to help other women reclaim midlife and embrace their age while also challenging the ageist sexist archetypes. She is the author of the book I just shared, Creatrix Rising. She also penned the award-winning book, A Delightful Little Book on Aging. She's a graduate of Naropa University's program in writing and poetics and was a contributor to the Rogue Valley Messenger in Oregon. A former iHeartRadio host, she is now a popular guest on podcasts where she inspires women to embrace the strength and passion of their personal story. Stephanie continues to build her speaker's resume by giving presentations for groups like the Ashland Literary Arts Festival, Breaking the Glass, and many others. Welcome, Stephanie. I'm so glad to have you here today for this conversation.
I'm excited to be here. Thanks, Linda.
Well, before we dive into your book, I want to know a little bit more about you and what led you to decide to even write about aging.
Well, aging started, I wish I could tell you it was a conscious decision, but it was one of those serendipitous things that happened. I was living in Oregon at the time. I was in my early 60s. I was doing as much publishing work as I could do. So I was writing for the local newspaper, for the Rogue Valley Messenger. And I was writing for a blog called 60 and Me. And the cool thing about blogs, as you probably know, is you get like instantaneous feedback from people who agree or disagree or have comments on what you're writing about. And what I discovered was that there were lots and lots and lots of women like myself who were not going gently into that good night. That in fact, the word retirement just didn't even hold true anymore. And that there were a lot of stereotypes that women were like kind of pushing away and throwing off. Stereotypes like, well, you need to slow down now and, you know, be careful of what you do. And these are your golden years. And translation, your golden years, you know, like stick a fork in it and it's done. But what I saw when I really opened my eyes and looked around me was not only were there lots of women like me, but there were very public figures. And some things happened in our culture right around the time that A Delightful Little Book on Aging was happening. One was the Women's March of 2017, when all of these women came together and unified wearing their homemade knitted pussy hats as if saying, we're not going to be the butt of the joke. And right after that, the hashtag MeToo movement happened. And so secrets that had been kept by so many for so long started to dispel. And there was a great sense of unification. In 2018, just the following year, more women ran for local, state, and national political office than ever before in the history of this country. So women all around me were blooming, blossoming, coming into their own and most of them were over 50. So I began thinking about what's the archetype. If you look at the old archetype, the neo-pagan archetype of maiden, mother, crone, the word crone never quite resonated with me. So that's where writing began for me about aging and where it has come now full circle with Creatrix Rising.
It's so beautiful. And it's funny that, like, I'm going to be 60. I have one more year left in my 50s. And that word crone never resonated with me either. So I want to talk about what led you to discover or connect with this creatrix archetype. And what is this emerging creatrix archetype so they can, our audience can really understand it?
Well, as I said, I saw in the culture around me that women were not aging in the conventional sense. And sometimes you get a hold of an idea and it just dogs you until you do something about it. So this was one of those ideas. Okay, if it's not the archetype of crone, then what is it? And I called a friend of mine who's a Jungian analyst, and I said, and I asked him just that question. If it's not crone, what is it? He didn't have a complete answer for me or an answer that I really wanted to resonate with. But I kept looking and digging, and I started writing the book anyway. I knew that something was happening. I knew that I wanted to talk about it. And my editor, God bless her, in one of our sessions said to me, you know, I like the word creatrix for what you're talking about. Well, I thought it was a word she'd made up, you know, kind of like meaning creative, but it wasn't a word she'd made up. At further research, creatrix means a woman who makes things. And it comes from the three Greek fates of the spinner, the weaver, and the cutter. The weaver was the creatrix, the woman who makes things. And that's what I see in our culture of midlife women claiming this power of midlife that is, it's new. It's a new emerging thing. The reason it's new is because if you don't have to go back very far in our history, just in my lifetime or your lifetime, to see where women were, you know, fighting tooth and nail for basic rights, things like, I want a credit card without the signature of my husband on it. That was something that happened in 1974 when I was just, you know, entering my 20s, that a law was passed that women could get credit without the signature of a male relative on the document. So Creatrix Rising now is something that we're claiming. It's like, this is our time to throw a stake in the ground and say, yeah, we have arrived. This is our time.
I'm going to say that's so beautiful, and your description is so beautiful. As I shared with you offline, I've been using that name for 5 or 6 years, but I never knew. It was just an intuitive thing. But what you just described of the history of it, like the spinner, the weaver, the cutter, and it ties in and makes it even more real for me. For me, it's always been, I've been a creative, you know, spirit since I was a child. And then I reached this point in my life and in my entrepreneurial journey, especially, which has been 30 years, that I said, I am no longer going to do business the way the world tells you to do business. I want it to come into me, the inspiration, come into my heart chakra. That's the intention. And my role is one thing, to honor what I receive and birth it to the world. So that was my energetic meaning behind me choosing Creatrix. But what I'm hearing from you, it's so much deeper. It's almost like this. And it's funny because now I can think of a bunch of women in my community who I know will love your message. I'll be sure to share their book. They are all creatrixes. They are in that stage. And so many are going to be like, get me that book, girl. Because it's going to help them make sense. Because some of them, I'll be honest, they're struggling. They're being more creative than they ever have. Whether that's art, trying new things, Stephanie. But what they're doing is they're struggling with the identity of it. And I think by reading your book, it's going to give them permission to own it. It's a part of them.
Well, hopefully what the book stimulates is a woman discovering her own story, her own piece of feminist history, You know, we think of the women's movement as something that happened outside of us. And we forget to look in our own families, that in every family, there's that woman who was a first, whether it was a great-grandmother, a grandmother, or a mother, that the woman that was the first to start her own business, the woman that was the first to go to college, the woman that was the first to play a musical instrument. And so this book tells those stories through my story and also through stories of women that I've known. And what I want to do is inspire women to find your personal story, your personal piece of feminist history, and let that story inform you. Somehow it's fallen out of vogue that we sit around and share our stories, and yet that's the place that we're the most connected, our stories. You know, this morning before we went on air, you talked to me about being on your deck and this beautiful piece of land that you live on that I got this little internet glimpse of. And that story will inform the rest of my day. You know, I will finish this show and I will say to my husband, I had the loveliest experience, and I will share with him those thoughts and those feelings that make up this small arc of a story. Here's where I started and here's how I was transformed. And that's what we need to pay attention to as women, to really embrace our power. Where did you start and how are you transformed? And interestingly, often what transforms us are our failures, our mistakes, our poor choices. That's kind of the grist for the mill that lifts us up and allows us then to go on and make a different choice. But those things are just, you know, those are chapters in the story. Those are pages that need to be turned, that we can turn. We can rewrite the ending to our story at any time.
Oh, I love that statement that you said, that it's chapters in the story, but it really isn't your whole story. And storytelling is an important part of everything that I do. So as I'm a book publisher also, so we call it authentic storytelling, the model that we share. And for me, story, as you just said, like, think of it. In the old days, way back, everyone would sit around the campfire and share their story. That's how family histories got passed down. So it's a part of who we are. And in your book, I love too that after each chapter, you have the reflection and exercises, because I think it slows us down from taking in what you share and then going within. And was that a conscious choice to bring that in after each chapter to help women integrate?
Yes.
Yeah, yes. It was powerful.
It's an integrative piece for... I'm a strong proponent of reflection and contemplation, because I don't think we have enough of it in our world. You know, the mantra is, I'm so busy, and we have so many devices that take us away from, you know, we look at our devices instead of looking into someone else's eyes. So the idea of working with reflections and contemplations and journaling. And it's not even that you have to do the journaling. I mean, you can just look at the questions and sit quietly with those questions and decide what it is that you, where you want to go with those. But that's, you know, to come full circle back to where this started with, you know, women that feel unsteady on their ground when it comes to claiming their identity, and especially this newer identity of aging. This is the place to begin. There's a reason that nature keeps us alive past our childbearing years. Because, you know, just kind of physiologically, once you've had kids, you've served your purpose. And it's like, but still nature keeps you alive for another 40, 50 years. Why is that? And I think it's so that we get to that contemplative, reflective, I've slowed down just enough now to take in the beauty and the richness of the life around me, to appreciate and be grateful for the life around me, that before I was just too busy, too much on the Zoom to really hold that in my heart. And just getting to that place of reflection and contemplation, that takes away some of the anxiety right there about what this new identity, what this brave new world is with regards to being an older woman.
Well, that really resonates. I remember the years I lived in Zoom speed, you know, and now my sacred time is so important to me. We're going to take a break, Stephanie. And when we come back, Let's dive even deeper into this conversation. I can't wait. We'll be back, everyone, in a moment. Please visit byline-stephanie.com to stay connected with Stephanie. Watch for her new book, Creatrix Rising, which will be available in August of 2021. And we will be back in a moment.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Inspiration for a woman's soul. Aspire Magazine, inspiring and supporting women on the path of self-discovery. Claim your free digital subscription today, which includes access to thousands of dollars of personal development bonus gifts from Team Inspiration Partners. Claim your Aspire Magazine subscription today at subscribetoaspire.com.
Hey, America, we need to have a little talk. We've got more food than we know what to do with in this country, yet 17 million kids in America are struggling with hunger. Makes no sense. Luckily, the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks has volunteers gathering excess food and getting it to hungry kids. They're kind of like food angels. Hey, become a food angel yourself by supporting Feeding America and your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. We can't do it without your help. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Are you trying to get from point A to point B and need a little advice? Connect with the counselors at OM Times Advisors. Whether you're looking for a life coach or a spiritual intuitive, the advisors participating at advisors.omtimes.com were carefully chosen based on their gifts, skills, and professionalism. OM Times Advisors, connecting you with the best advisors in the business.
Hi, everyone. This is Shay Parker, the host of Best of the Best, which airs live right here on IOM Radio every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern and 5 p.m. Pacific. I'm super excited to bring you expert guest hosts, spiritual discussions, free psychic readings, and so much more. I can promise that you will not want to miss this one-of-a-kind, fun, yet touching, down-to-earth show. Join us every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific on OTRFM. This is Shay Parker, and I can't wait to see you there.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Welcome back. You're listening to Inspired Conversations. With me today is Stephanie Raffalock, author of Creatrix Rising, Unlocking the Power of Midlife Women. So everything you just said, especially when you said that everyone is looking at devices and not into each other's eyes. Me and my honey just had that conversation because we were out to eat, and it was breaking my heart because the younger generations, right? They have no, it's almost like they're losing the ability to have compassionate connection. And maybe because I'm older and wiser now, because I was them, I'm sure, at one time, I look and go, you don't know what you're missing. You don't know. So talk about what you're seeing in that emotional disconnect.
Well, just the word disconnect kind of says it all, doesn't it?
Yes.
You know, in order to thrive in life, we long to feel like we belong. And how does belonging happen? And belonging is, you know, different than fitting in, but belonging happens when we make connection with someone. How do we make connection with someone? We get quiet with them. We share our stories with them. We can sit quietly together without looking at our devices. I remember when my sister-in-law died about 10, 15 years ago now, and I went up to be with my brother during his time of grief. And we went into the backyard and we just sat. I don't think we spoke a word in maybe 2 hours. We just sat. And that's what I was there to do. I was there to bear witness to his grief. And it was such a special moment. It was so connecting to be in that quiet and that solitude together. And that's when we don't have that, I think we miss the deepening of connection in our heart that we really long for. You know, it's kind of like we weren't born to go out and just walk by ourselves. We were born to walk side by side with others. But if you're always looking at a device, if you're always on your headset, you don't get that. And I think technology is wonderful. Don't get me wrong. I love technology. It has some miraculous moments, but it also has an underbelly. And the underbelly is that it's really addictive. And when it becomes that addictive, we disconnect with each other. And it does something to our humanity. It lessens it. We recede from humanity when we're just on our devices and not really with each other.
So true about the whole section about belonging. I think that's just an innate longing that we all have. I have a question for you. We're going to shift gears a little bit. Is, you know, every time I used to hear the crone and that whole archetype lineage, I'd go, that's not me. That will never be me. Why do you think midlife women are like sometimes characterized as the old crone? Like,
well, the name came from a man. It didn't come from a woman. And where the triple woman, also sometimes referred to as the triple goddess, came from was there was a poet and novelist in the 1930s and 40s named Robert Graves. And Robert Graves wrote a book about his poetic muse. And he called his poetic muse Maiden, Mother, and Crone. And then Robert Graves did a funny thing that I know some authors have done. That is that he tried to make Maiden, Mother, Crone as if it were really part of women's history. Like he tried to plug it into antiquity. And of course, he got busted pretty quickly that this wasn't the case, that Maiden, Mother, Crone was his creation. And it wasn't, you know, something that had been around for 1,000 or 2,000 years. So Maiden, Mother, Crone seeped into the culture nonetheless. And he had written about all of this in his book, The White Goddess. And that's the book he got busted for. So it seeped into the culture and it was kind of adopted by neo-paganism. And the layover was, we will call this the triple goddess and the maiden will be the crescent moon, the mother will be the full moon, and the crone will be the waning moon. And so it was adopted culturally in that way. The problem with the word crone is a word that entered the lexicon sometime in the 1300s. And the actual meaning of the word crone is disagreeable old woman. No woman I know wants that title. It just kind of drips with disdain. So that's where the word came from. That's how it got into the culture. And here we are in 2021 talking about something that happened 70 years ago. But even before 70 years ago, the word crone was used and it did become a type of archetypal model. I know that there are feminist groups that have tried to reclaim the word. I'm of the mind that certain words do not need reclaiming. They need to be banished. We all know what those words are. And I think that crone is one of them. So thus, creatrix replaces the word crone. Because it's not a matter of becoming an old woman. It's a matter that women grow older, just as men grow older. And you'll notice that the archetypes for men as they grow older are sage and wizard. Those are masculine words. And that's why we need this new word for this emerging archetype that we have in the culture. Creatrix, a woman who makes things.
So beautiful. And now this resonates with me. I have a few friends, you know, they're on the goddess path. I'm blessed to work with a lot of spiritual visionaries. And many I notice identify as the queen. So energetically, they use the queen to replace the crone. And I once asked them, I go, so what does that mean to you? And she goes, I'm not the crone. I am the queen. I'm owning my full power, my wisdom, my life's wisdom. And like even that word, I felt the energetic difference. And I, of course, it's no surprise that crone was developed by a male. So I love, it's about ownership too. What woman, as you said, wants to own the word crone? You don't, but we can step into and own creatrix. It's expansive. It's uplifting. So I'm so excited to be part of bringing this out to even more women with you. So one of the things that I know every woman is about to say, oh my God, it's so, you know, pervasive. You know, women ashamed as they age. It's like, oh my God, you know, look at the wrinkles. But men are more distinguished. Like I always told my honey, my honey's going to be 70. And he's a stud muffin and a half. He's the most active, amazing guy I know. I'm 10 years younger. And I look and go, he is seen in a different light than I am seen. And I know every woman can relate to this. So talk about that, because I know you've done research and you cover it a lot in your book too.
Well, you know, the whole physical appearance thing harkens back to women being chattel. You know, I want to have the best looking horse and I want to have the best looking woman. And so how does best looking get defined? It gets defined with smooth skin that is not wrinkled, good muscle tone, ready to bear children, and it's the purview of youth. So that is supported, of course, by advertising that, you know, promises a cream that is going to make your neck change or is going to make it so that you don't have wrinkles. And we buy into this, like you said, with this sense of shame. And part of creating the creatrix, part of claiming the creatrix, is that we eschew the shame, that to be shamed about one's age, I mean, we wouldn't do it to another woman. Why would we do it to ourselves?
Oh, so, so true. And one of the things I'm noticing on my journey is, and I think body issues comes with media. I've had a struggle to accept myself like so many women, you know, you're changing body over the years. And then maybe when I hear, let's see, I'm going to be 59. Maybe it was around 45. I said, how dare I complain? How dare I complain about this vessel that's helping me navigate this life? And I started a new relationship. But as you said, you have media coming at us all the time. Now I have a more loving relationship with aging and in my body. But I have to tell you, I have a lot of women in my audience, and it breaks my heart, a lot in the 30s and 40s, who have been saturated more than we have, right, by media. They grew up with it.
Right.
And I'm noticing, and I'm not, it's not a judgment. I know it's a personal choice, but it still breaks my heart. They are doing surgical things to their body at younger and younger ages.
Right. Because yeah, that's the trend, isn't it?
It is, and it's heartbreaking, not because they're doing it. It's the reasons that are feeding why they're doing it.
Right. The I'm not enough. I don't look good enough. In order to get further, I have to change my appearance. It's doing life on someone else's terms.
Yeah. And if it's the decisions coming from a place of inner peace and empowerment, then more to you. But I'm talking specifically, just so our listeners know, to the conversations I've had with women in my community. I have a global community, over 40,000 subscribers, so I get to have and hear a lot. It's the reasons they're sharing with me personally of why they're doing it. That's what I'm talking about today, not a judgment on anyone having work. I'm talking about personal conversations. That part wounds me.
Well, I think you've hit on something. It's the why of it. We want to live life on our own terms, and we don't want somebody else defining us. Now, if life on your own terms is to get work done, fine. I don't have a judgment about that either. That comes down to personal choice. But if you're not doing life on your own terms and you're doing it because you feel pressured by a culture to look a certain way, I mean, I guess you can do that for a while, but at a certain point, it's like you can't do facelifts and Botox and stuff like into your 80s and 90s. And if you've ever seen an older woman, like a true older woman who has not had work done and spent time with her, you don't really notice how she looks. It's what she carries. It's how she carries herself. It's how she comports herself in the world. Wisdom, love, openness. Some of the older women in my life are women that are the deepest listeners in my life. So when I'm being heard by someone like that, I'm certainly not looking at physical appearance. And physical appearance is always about, you know, an outside definition anyway. So how do we hold that within ourselves? How do we hold a new definition within ourselves? What is beauty at 60 years old? What is beauty at 70 years old? And it's a lot more than smooth skin, I promise you.
Oh, it is. And we're going to continue this conversation. We're going to take another real quick break. And I think this is so important because so many women fear getting older. So when we come back, we're going to continue that conversation. I'll be back in a moment with Stephanie Raffalock, author of Creatrix Rising. Visit her at byline-stephanie.com. We'll be back in a moment.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Does the energy in your life or home feel stuck or stagnant? Your home surroundings may be impacting your mood, energy level, and even how much money you attract. It's time to clear the energy blocks in your immediate surroundings so you can attract enhanced health, happiness, and abundance. Carrie Miller, feng shui expert, speaker, and coach, and the author of Feels Better, Flows Better, Feng Shui for Inspired Living, merges her sacred skills in feng shui, space clearing, aromatherapy, and coaching to support her clients in making subtle changes to their home that allow energy to flow and create spaces that are comfortable, functional, supportive, and inspiring. Whether you're called to clear one room or your full home, Carrie offers feng shui and energy clearing services on-site or virtually to meet your needs. Learn more at carriemillerconsulting.com.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
This is Terry Van Horn, and I want to invite you to join me for my weekly radio show, Healing Light, on OM Times Radio every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Healing Light, we want to bring love, light, and blessings into your world. You can find out more about us at www.healinglightonline.com. Blessings.
Me, a cat, moving in with a new human. It took a little getting used to. She has these weird games she likes to play, like this giant feather. She sticks it in my face. I swat it away. She sticks it in my face. I swat it away. It's almost like she thinks I enjoy it. But seeing how much fun she gets out of it, well, I guess it makes it all worth it. Humans.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
This is OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Welcome back, my friends. You're listening to Inspired Conversations. So, Stephanie, so many women fear getting older, that we were just talking about that in the last segment. How did you personally learn to celebrate aging?
Well, I started with celebrating menopause, which I know is kind of a funny thing to celebrate in one regard and in another regard not. But when I entered menopause, my husband said to me, "You're birthing a new creativity." And that phrase helped me through that period of menopause. It helped me to see menopause as not the end of something. Yes, it's the end of having your periods. You can't have any more children at this point. But it is also the beginning of something. And so the whole process of menopause then becomes an initiation, a psychological and spiritual initiation. It's a bridge that goes from the motherhood years to the creatrix years. And so it was through that process that I began to accept that There's no getting away from it. Your body is going to age. You're going to change. Connective tissue changes. Muscle tone changes. It doesn't mean you have to stop. It doesn't mean that you're going to be severely limited. And yes, there are challenges that are limiting, but the way you hold those is that you adapt. I was heartened during the pandemic when I did podcasts because I could talk about the adaptability of older age, that when you've lived 70 or 80 years, it's like staying in your house, wearing a mask, washing your hands, doing all of these things. It's like, well, you adapt because aging calls upon us to adapt. And adaptation is a wonderful thing. I no longer play tennis, but I walk 3 miles every morning. I no longer lift weights, but I do Pilates. So you do what you can do to create a vibrancy of life rather than a physical appearance of life, a vitality of life rather than what you look like in the mirror to yourself. And by the way, a smile is the best facelift that any of us can have because we all relate to that smile. It's an invitation to connect.
That is beautiful because what you were talking about earlier when you said when you're sitting across from an older woman, an elderly woman, you're not looking at her skin. For me, it's all about energy, essence, life essence, right? That's what I feel from someone, not their skin. So I just wanted to talk about that too. What you just shared about navigating menopause, your husband has so much wisdom to share that statement with you. I was like, that was such a sacred gift that he gave you.
It really was. And not forgotten, not easily forgotten, that gift, because it became like a writing prompt for me. It's like, oh my gosh, you're right. This is a new birth. You know, you birth children in your mother years, but in your creatrix years, you birth something else. You birth businesses, you birth gardens, you birth that gourmet cooking you've always wanted to get to. For a lot of women in older years, this is a time of reclamation. All those passions that you had to put aside because you were raising kids, you were paying a mortgage, you were taking care of a marriage, now there's like open space. So what is it that you want to make?
Well, that all aligns with my journey. When I hit my 50s, I went into full menopause at 48, just naturally. In my 50s, and I'm 59 now, my business, this business I've had for 15 years, everything changed. The kids were gone. We now have grandchildren. And all of a sudden, all that creative energy went into my media brands and all of that. It gives me so much joy. It's like I'm playing every day, not working every day. That's the energetic difference I feel. I feel like I worked before.
Yes.
Because of expectations and that's what you're supposed to do. But something within me changed in the last decade that I said, no, I don't want to work. I want to play. And that's when I began the dance. And as you said, birthing and creating, I did it through my business. And I do art sometimes too. So I do it that way. But I'd say all my energy goes that way. But guess what? I get that same energy back because I'm being aligned with my joy. Have you noticed that too for yourself?
Yes, because these are creative times for a woman. And so it is about your joy. It's about claiming that joy. And I think so much more than that, Julia Cameron says in her book, The Artist's Way, that, you know, the cool thing about creativity is that it's a microcosm of the macrocosm. And the macrocosm is creation itself. And then our like little personal creativity, that's the microcosm of creating. So in that way, you can hold creativity in a very sacred context. And it is creative play and it's divine play. And, you know, when I muse about the universe and sort of the mystery and the miracle of this place that we live, it's all about creative play.
Something you just said, the phrase divine play, that really resonated with me. That's what I feel like I'm dancing with the divine all the time. So that phrase was beautiful. Thank you for sharing it. So you share some well-known women who embody the creatrix archetype. So just to give our audience a feel, can you share some of them and what you see in them?
Well, I mean, you can look at somebody like Renee Zellweger was over 50 when she won the Golden Globe for her portrayal of Judy Garland in her last year. Certainly Ruth Bader Ginsburg was a creatrix extraordinaire. You look at people like Meryl Streep, who really changed acting for older women, you know, so that roles were created for older women. She did that way back with Bridges of Madison County. There are writers and poets and artists everywhere. I like to look at Iris Apfel, who I believe is still alive. And if you don't know who Iris Apfel is, she's amazing. She is a designer who still teaches design in New York to the young women that come to New York to internship in the fashion industry. She still teaches every year, I believe. And she's in her early 90s.
And she is a rock star. She
is.
And her fashion sense, I love seeing her photos. I'm like, girl, I want to be you.
That's right.
Yeah, she has so much.
That's right.
She owns her truth.
Yes. And you notice that Iris Apfel, it's like it's the whole package. You know, no one zeroes in and says, well, she looks 90. It's the whole package of how she puts herself together with fashion and, you know, this great creative flair that she has. And she's been a great inspiration to me because this is a woman who has truly done life on her own terms, and she owns who she is, and she has thrown a stake into the ground and claimed it. And no one will ever use the word insignificant around Iris Apfel. She's a great creatrix.
Ooh, those are some great examples, and each one resonated with me. What do you do personally to stay connected to your creatrix energy?
Well, I usually start my days on the back porch or the front porch with a cup of good black tea and sweetener. And I just watch the day come into being. I live in Texas, so it's hot here in the mornings in the summertime like this. So I have to sit out early. So often I get to see light breaking into the day. And there's something about light breaking into the day that really fills me. It inspires me. There's a place in me that knows when I look out and I see the forest behind me, our house goes up to a green belt. And Texas forest is different than the forest of the Pacific Northwest, but it's forest nonetheless. And I have this intuitive sense that the forest holds all of our stories. And that's why it's so special for us to walk in nature. So nature is something that I nourish myself with to keep my creatrix alive and vibrant and making things. And then I remember to say thank you. Gratitude practice is a very simple thing. It can be a complicated practice if you're into that. Or for me, it's a very simple thing of just breathing in and out, thank you. Gratitude will get you a long, long way in this world. And it settles my heart. It settles my mind. And those are the things that I use. And then, of course, I write every day. So I write and I do podcasts like yours, and I get to share my message with the world about being a vital, wonderful, happy woman at almost the age of 70. You're in your last year of your 50s, and I'm in my last year of my 60s.
Well, I love it. And I'm so glad that we've come together, because it's such an important conversation that I think more and more of us need to hear, right? That aging is not, it's not this heavy, dense thing that we've been taught to think it is. It's actually a beautiful time in your life if you create that mindset and embrace it that way. And two of the things that you do daily, I do. My honey and I, at least 5 days a week, we go for sunrise walks just because of our schedules around the pond, through the woods. So we have a conservation area that abuts our land. And like you just said, sometimes we walk in silence just to see that sun coming up. Is like, I think it's like church.
It is church.
It is for us. Sometimes we have our sacred conversations. And then gratitude changed. My gratitude practice changed my life and the trajectory of my life 30 years ago. So it plays a big, important part in mine. So we have that in common, my friend.
It's a good thing to have in common.
It is. And I got to tell you, you know, when life's coming at you fast and hard and or life throws you a curveball, which it will, because that's life. Me having that gratitude practice has got me through some really tough times, as I'm sure it has yours, because it allows me to recalibrate instantly. Yes, this is happening, but look at this.
Right. It's kind of a means of self-soothing. When you practice gratitude in the face of adversity, when you're looking for the things that there are still, that you still have to be grateful for in the face of adversity, it becomes self-soothing. It becomes self-comforting. And it's an acknowledgement that there is an energy out there that is so much greater than any of us can fathom. And that the roots of that energy, I just have to believe, are love.
Well, I'm a believer with you. It is love. I'm with you on that. I don't know. I can remember, and I'm not sure if you can realize, I can remember, God, 30 years ago, 1991. When I remember picking up a book, it might have been Louise Hay's, about a gratitude practice. And I'm like, what? She wants me to name five things I'm grateful for every morning. I was in the energy of, what do I have to be grateful for? You know, the victim, that heavy, dense energy. Right. But something inside me, and I know now was my soul, my higher power, just said, just do it. And I've shared this on numerous shows over the last few decades in speaking. I can remember so many times going, well, I don't have anything to be grateful for. Okay, I'm grateful for the hot cup of coffee. But it would be done with this angst of that I didn't, I guess not only did I not have something to be grateful for, I didn't know how to feel it. Mm. But I stuck with this, and within 6 months, not only did my heart begin to heal, this is just how I felt inside, my spirit began to soar, but more than that, everything on the outside started to flow in a different way towards me that I noticed I had more to be grateful for. And then I added an evening gratitude practice. I tell everyone, if you ask me what changed my life, I was a single welfare mom, runaway, high school dropout, you name it, I was that. It was that. And now I see what you just said. I was tapping into love instead of everything else.
Well, you will see when you read the rest of Creatrix Rising that we share a similar story. I have that sort of rough and tumble beginning as well that I now hold as, you know, one of the great gifts of my life, because it's, you know, the thing with the pearl and the oyster, the way it becomes a pearl is the grit, the irritation. That's what makes a pearl. And so my life became a string of pearls from the grit. And then I was introduced to the gratitude. And I'm practicing.
Well, I was going to say, I got your book last night, so I was scanning before I call. And I got to one part where I saw you, it was a little trip you took, if you know what
yes.
I'm talking about, that little trip. But I said, oh, I knew that you had a background and a journey, may not be the same as mine, but there was still struggle and pain and all that. And a lot of people ask me that know my life story. I mean, I shared it on NBC's Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus in 2010, I think it was. And I have no regrets. I have no shame anymore. I did for many years. When I let all that go and said, wait a minute, I wouldn't be who I am today if I didn't have that. As you so beautifully described, right? That grit created the pearl, which is who we are today.
Right.
I can now look back at each one and see the life lessons. And from a spiritual perspective, I can look back now and also see that every experience was to prepare me for the work I do in the world today with women.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it sounds like you found that to be true too.
I found that to be true too. And, you know, to come again full circle, to something that we were talking about earlier, and that's that the importance of knowing our story, the importance of knowing I began here, here's the arc of my transformation, and here's where I wound up. That's powerful to know that about oneself, and it's incredibly forgiving, because to know one's story is to know, you know, this is a chapter. This is a page, and now you turn the page and you move on. None of us are exempt from the sufferings of this world. None of us. Yet we can take those sufferings and it becomes like compost for the garden. It's what makes the garden bloom so beautifully. And it also becomes the point where we can relate. Because every woman that you've ever talked to or that I've ever talked to has a place inside where she has hurt. And she has also a place inside where she has experienced joy. And we learn to connect with those places and other people through sharing our stories. So again, full circle.
Thank you for bringing that all together. It's so beautiful. And I think too, as I share in my publishing company, when I explained it to our authors, when a woman shares her story from a place of sacred truth and vulnerability, that energy goes out, that story goes out. And another woman who may be struggling receives that story and says, if she can get through this and come out the other side as a warrior woman, then so can I. It's like this sense of it, our story can provide hope and possibility to others too.
That's right. That's right. And the fact that we give those stories air make them maybe less hurtful for us to experience. Like at a certain point, you were able to let go of all that grit. And one of the ways we're able to let go of that grit is by giving air to those stories, I think.
Oh, I 100% agree. I think the more I shared it and stopped hiding aspects of myself, hiding meant I was in the shame or self-judgment. The more I shared it, the more those triggers released till one day I just woke up and could share my story and see the light in it, the love in it, and not feel, as I love the term you use, the grit. So I want to say thank you. Thank you for joining me today for this sacred conversation. It's inspired me. I'm so excited to have an advanced reader copy. So guess what I'll be doing this weekend? And I want to invite everyone to go to byline-stephanie.com. Creatrix Rising will be available in August 2021, but you can stay connected with Stephanie, read her blog, check out everything she's been doing, check out her previous book as well. And you know, embrace where you are, wherever it may be on the aging journey, and grab a copy of Creatrix Rising when it comes out. So Stephanie, thank you, my friend, for being such a light in the world and in talking about this topic that I really believe needs to come to the surface even more.
Thank you so much. It was a delight to be with you.
And until next time, my friends, choose love, choose joy, choose happiness. Blessings, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Inspired Conversations with publisher Linda Joy. Join our sacred space every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern and meet leading female visionaries, empowering authors, heart-centered female entrepreneurs, coaches, and healers. Inspired Conversations with Linda Joy is a soulful venue where guests share the obstacles they've overcome, along with wisdom and lessons learned on their personal journey that led them to the transformational work they do in the world. Inspired Conversations to empower you on your path to authentic and soulful living.